Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. In studio with me today is Chloe Goodchild, singer, educator, author, and founder of The Naked Voice. Chloe is dedicated to the realization of compassionate communication in all realms of human life. So welcome, Zoe, into the studio with us today, and it's so good to have you with us.
Oh, it's lovely to be talking with you too, Kara. Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, beautiful. So let's start in a very easy place. Let's start in a very lovely place. Let's start with our childhood, and in this case, with your childhood. Do you remember having a love for singing even at a young age? And what is one of your most powerful vocal memories as a child?
Well, I had a rather unusual beginning because I had... I was always a child of wonder, that's for sure. I was one of those, as many children hopefully are. But I actually had traumatic surgery on my ears when I was about 4 years old. And I had my issues with my tonsils. And my mom had found me hemorrhaging to death, actually, in my bed. And hemorrhaging to death. And so we went roaring back into the hospital. And this surgery actually resulted in my being partially deaf for about 3 years. Mm. And I think the power of that experience and the healing power of that experience was that it actually compelled me to go inwards and to really access silence and the inner sound in a way that I might not otherwise have done. And I, you know, of course, with many stories, the wounded healer is a very prominent one, I think, very often for sound healers as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a major initiation for me. And then out of that experience came this absolute fascination with sound, because sound became, as my hearing slowly came back again towards the age of seven, music was an incredible bridge back into everyday life.
So were you able to regain 100% of your hearing again after this event?
I did, yeah. No, it's absolutely, it's an incredible story, actually. And my sensitivity towards sound, I think, was probably activated there. But at the same time, I launched myself into, across the whole of my adolescence, into an absorption of the Western sacred choral repertoire. Mm-hmm. And that was the most extraordinary inspiration and healing of my childhood.
Beautiful. You're passionate in your work, The Naked Voice. You're passionate about every single voice, the one that we use every day to communicate, the the silent voice of wisdom, and the voices that are rising in song. So what drew you to the transformational voice work? You obviously, you know, through being deaf as a child, you were very drawn to sound. But then what brought you on that next path instead of perhaps being a soloist for a, you know, a sacred choir or, right, going into classical music? You chose to go into transformational voice work. What touched
you? Yeah,
so
well, I went through the whole classical musical education process as well, and I ended up studying music at Cambridge and then decided that I wanted to, and I had a most really rich experience of contemporary and classical music there, with a lot more choral singing. Mm-hmm. I just loved the whole the impact of a choir, you know, just being in the middle of a choir and just being one of many, many voices. Mm-hmm. And yet there was always something missing for me in the performative arena. Also, a lot of the music, I suppose, that I was singing was taking me up and out of my body, because it was so ethereal and exquisitely sacred and so on. But being a very sort of, being having a sort of an ascending kind of nature, I realized that I needed to do something quite dramatic to really immerse myself in indigenous cultures, cultures for which and for whom sound was part of, absolutely integral to everyday life. And it was sound that was of nature and sound that was very connected with the ground and with the embodiment of the human spirit. And so I took myself off at the age of 18 to Africa and spent 7 months out in the Akamba Mountains working in a project that was integrating different tribal communities and integrating the languages and the songs and the chants and so on. And then that actually really was the most profound experience, really, in coming to earth, if you like, and really getting down on the ground. I remember I was partly what I was doing out there was teaching voluntarily, and the first class that I was asked to teach was a physical education class. Mm-hmm. And I just asked everyone in the room, what is PE for you? What does that mean for you? And they just said, come outside. And the children all went roaring outside, and they placed me in the middle of a circle and started dancing around me in this kind of mesmerizing circle, circular fashion. And this was the dance of the jumping goat. And this was initiation number one into really absorbing, you know, an embodied singing music education upbringing. Mm-hmm. And so it was the deepest relief to find myself sitting amidst Indian musicians who would be playing these instruments that were always playing this mesmerizing, unchanging ground home note, you know, the sar in the Indian scale. And that was really the next initiation for me. It was the integration, really, of the African and the Indian influences on my own sonic life that really opened the door for me on realizing, my goodness, when I came back from India, realizing, my goodness, everyone has a voice. The music is everywhere. You know, as Rumi says, don't worry about saving these songs. We've fallen into the place where everything is music. And it was really this fascination with the mystical, but with an embodied mystical musical life that inspired me to really want to simply share this with others, and share this experience with others. So in my 20s, I just put up a little notice in my local community hall in England and just said, does anybody want to find their voice? Very innocently and naively. But, you know, coming from this very rich experience in India and Africa of sound combined with the whole Western choral experience. And so I feel incredibly privileged and blessed to have been in this situation. And that was combined also with meetings with non-dual spiritual teachers out in India who really brought home to me what the unchanging note and the embodiment of the unchanging note really means.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, an experience of oneness. And it was that experience of oneness that brought me to a teacher called Harilal Punjaji, who came to be known as Papaji. And he was a disciple of Ramana Maharshi. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky to meet him in 1990 and was in dialogue with him for quite some time. So it was this sort of alchemy between non-dual conversation and sound that really launched my own fascination with the seamless connection between silence and speaking and singing.
You spoke of the unified field, the feeling of oneness. We also just heard the name Rumi, the Sufi mystic, the poet, and he describes the encounter with our quantum interconnectedness in the following poem, which I know is very dear to you. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field, and I'll meet you there. So you're talking about this unified field of awareness also being a singing field. Share with us what the field is between the deep listening, our inner voice work, that vibrant pulsating silence that we carry within, and also all the music that I'm sure you also hear. I hear it as a singer, that even when I'm not singing audibly to the outer world, I'm always, you know, there's music running through my bones. And then also going between audible music and tones and toning and chanting and singing and that space of deep silence. Many mystics have always also said it's not about the notes necessarily. It is about the silence that you find in between the tones that we are playing or singing.
Yeah, it's all about that really, isn't it? It's all about how we can return to presence. How sound is the gateway home into silence. I very often encourage people when we're sharing sound and voice to not only listen to the sound that falls out of the mouth, but to be very attentive to the quality of silence that the voice leaves behind. And that has a very lovely impact on people, especially people who are coming to sound and singing, you know, from no apparent musical training of a more conventional kind. But nevertheless, we all have access to this sound, and we all have access to this capacity to become aware of the power of sound to deepen our language of silence, really, which is the deepest music.
Right, and I think what many people may not know is that the silence, when we are silent, exactly, they perceive it as being a vacuum or a dead place. Like if something is like silent, it's either sound or it's the opposite. But I think, would you agree with me that the silence is actually very much alive?
Well, it's as soon as we, I suppose it's as soon as we disappear beneath the busyness of the conceptual mind, we suddenly find ourselves in this all-inclusive embrace of life, you know, that is prior to thought, and therefore it's it has the same impact on us as it's like when you see a newborn baby that is just completely alert and alive to everything. The whole body, you know, all 50 trillion cells in the body are vibrating and moving and completely at one, you know, in a coherence with each other. silence is the goal of sound. It's our home. It's really our home.
Beautiful. Hold that thought. Yeah. Hold that thought, Chloe. We're going to take a small station break, very short, and we'll be back again with Chloe Goodchild in a few moments.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramala Mitten. And we want to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm Kara Johnstad, and with me today is singer, educator, and creator of The Naked Voice, Miss Chloe Goodchild. And before the break, we were discussing the singing field, also known as the unified field of awareness, or the quantum field, and also transformational voice work. So, Chloe, I'd like to ask you this question. I think many of us know the sonic vibration of our soul is the essence of who we are. We say sound mind, sound body. You were saying in the first part of the show how very important sound is to presence, to that feeling of oneness. And each and every one of us carries a vibrational voice print, just like a fingerprint is unique. Our history is also carried within our voices, and our soul journey can be heard in our voices, and that giving voice to this primal sound takes us back to that pure, open energy channel that we are. And by returning to that open channel, we are able to release shame, trauma, wounded narratives that may be holding us back from that full oneness that you were talking about. So can you share with us a little bit about why it is so important for us to express our true, authentic voice and to let that authentic voice be heard?
Well, I think it's us. If we understand, as I think both you and I clearly do, we sound like we're sisters in sound. It's just so lovely hearing the description also of your work, because it's I'm thinking, oh, I'm so glad we've met because we're really sharing such a wonderfully similar journey. It's brilliant. So it's a great privilege to be here and talking with you. I think my response to your question would be in response to the question, why is it so important that we find this authentic sound within us? Because I would say our very life depends on it. Many of us don't realize that because we've been brought up to believe there's something called singing that is separate from speaking, and then there's something else called silence, and these three realms of dimensions of communication are beset with kind of negative, childhood experiences. So speaking is very much related more to the, the left brain and to the rational mind and to everything that one has to do at school or in social conditioning to impress others, to win debates, to compete in shows, to perform, to be impressive. In other words, to be completely as separate as one can possibly get from oneself and everyone else. And then, of course, singing, which is more associated with the right brain, perhaps, although, as we know now, as soon as someone's singing, it lights up the whole brain. But very often it's connected more with the intuitive mind and with the empathic mind and with the heart and soul and so on. But, of course, many people, I'm sure you must know thousands of people, as do I, who, when we ask them, how do you feel about your voice, they will say, I haven't got one, or I don't sing, in a kind of rather heavy tone, or I was told, to shut up or to be quiet or thrown out of the choir, or, all those stories that simply were there that we were victims of because in our culture, singing is something that is associated with performance and entertainment and, again, impressing others. And singing, certainly in the culture that I've been brought up in, has been, much more the prerogative of a minority, elitist minority of trained musicians, for which one has to go and pay money to hear, So many people have this completely dysfunctional relationship with their voices because we've been brought up to believe the speaking over here, the singing over here. I can't identify really very well with both. Both experiences have given me a sense that I'm not really anybody, that I can't really perform or impress as I'm being required to, either in the education system or wherever else. And so my sense is what you're doing, which is what I'm also doing, is just reminding people that the sound, there is a sound that is prior, is older and deeper and wiser than the polarity of all conflict, and deeper and wiser than the kind of separated, alienating way in which we've been brought up to communicate, either rationally on the one hand or, performatively and empathically, but very often reactively on the other hand, And so we've been brought up to experience sound as a quite terrifying experience, something that we just would rather not talk about, or certainly
Exactly. Yeah. We've also been brought up that all those natural, emotional, intuitive sounds like grunts and groans and sighs and are very much suppressed when we're speaking. We're told not to giggle in classes or not to cry too loudly or if at all, or yeah, not to snort or grunt or, I mean, we have many sounds as a body. We do have many sounds, and those are basically forbidden. I think what's interesting, too, is for us to become aware that the conditioning that we are talking about, these are also voices. These are voices that come into our system, and in many ways, a very sensitive, very open system override our own voice, which is still a small seed or a, you know, it's a very strong voice when we're young, but we give a lot of space, which that is the conditioning, to other voices, teachers telling us that we're not able to sing, or I have many stories of vocal wounds, you know, in choirs where they were looking for two singers and only three auditioned, and that one person, the third person, didn't get in, where I as a educator would say, my goodness gracious, why not just take all three? I mean, what's the problem,
yeah,
right? The more the merrier, right? But the wounding stays for a lifetime. I mean, the wounding stays until they're often 40, 50, 60 years old. They're carrying these deep wounds of how their voice was rejected. It's very, very deep. So how can we assist in healing old narratives through voice work? How can we help heal?
Well, I think step one is that we really we get together like this and we have conversations like this. Mm-hmm. But we also, I think it's happening. I think it's really happening. The response to your question is happening. I'm so thrilled after sort of 30 years or so of teaching and exploring how to heal the voice and so on, that there are just increasing, ever-expanding numbers of people who are now really entering this field and really starting to ask this question and really much more courageously and responding to it. I think the first thing that has to happen is that we open the door. So for myself, it was just putting up a notice in the my local community hall and just saying, does anybody want to come and join me? So you create a safe space. And I'm presently working with a wonderful group that I think you'd really love called Compassionate Mental Health UK. This is a group of people who've come together made up of medical practitioners, psychiatrists, psychologists, psychotherapists, soul doctors, which is what I'm called, and then people who have been at the victims of really intense negative conditioning and have been stigmatized in all kinds of ways under the name of mental health patients. And what happens is we all come together in a gathering, which we call a gathering, not a conference, and nobody knows who anybody is. Mm. So the psychiatrist, you have no idea whether you're speaking to a psychiatrist or to somebody, you know, who has been labeled as schizophrenic. You just are all together exploring the very question you've just asked. And so I think the first thing very often is to create safe spaces where people from all perspectives on the whole question of what creates dysfunctional self-hatred or, misplaced self-perception, misunderstanding, suffering, pain, how can we really respond to this is to create safe spaces where people can come together and know they are heard. They are heard. They're not analyzed. They're not therapized. They are literally heard. And it's such a privilege to be in a context like that. It's quite radical, certainly in England.
Well, it sounds, I mean, yeah. No, continue. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah. I think it's the first step, of course, is knowing that you are literally being heard, and therefore your sound is worth something. And connecting worth to sound is a very profound experience, isn't it? For example, I have a practice just called Sounding Your Name, where I just ask somebody what their name is, and then so if you were to ask me, what's my name?
What's your name?
Chloe. All right, so that's just my personality saying,
yeah.
Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I just stay with that and just remember what was just said, Chloe. And I'm still apparently speaking, but now I'm going to, with repetition, I'm going to give more attention to the pitch of that apparently spoken name. Chloe. Now I'm going to bring more energy to it, and I'm going to just see if I can hear more what the actual pitch frequency of that Chloe is. I'm going to slow it down. Chloe. So I'm not singing, I'm not speaking now. I'm in a kind of spoken song zone. Chloe. Chloe. I'm going back to the spoken. Then I'm coming into the spoken song. Chloe. 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 And the more attention I give to the pitch, the more I'm moving from a kind of heady thinking space to a, am I getting this right, or I'm too self-conscious space, into a, who is doing this? You know, where is this sound coming from? And so the self-consciousness starts to fall away as my attention moves from a more rational self-consciousness into a reactive self-consciousness, we could say, into a more attentive listening to the sound itself. So it's not needing to impress anybody anymore. It's just expressing itself for no reason other than it's just happening. And what I notice happens is that the soul starts to show up. The heart, the center of the chest starts to soften because the body's not under threat anymore. It's not having to perform. It's not having to impress anybody. It's literally just expressing sound for its own sake. And this can produce tears. It can produce a very deep relaxation. It can produce something that is deeply felt from the heart very strongly.
And then
that attention and the embodying of that attention and the awareness that one is in a safe place listening to oneself without any agenda at all, without any need for a specific outcome, that can be a very, very powerful, very simple but very profound way to really start opening up the language of the soul, which is always, of course, very close by once the heart opens up.
That's very beautiful. That is also the magic, that the voice is this portal and located above the heart and our breath, our lungs. And that's why I think we need so much safety, because the voice can also guide and protect us. So it also can close off if we don't feel safe. And that's why what you were saying is why it's so important for the voice to have this safety factor, to be able to really blossom and to really open. It has to trust.
Yes.
Thank you, Chloe. Stay tuned. We're going to take another station break, and then we'll be back in 1 or 2 minutes with Chloe Goodchild.
bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm Cara Johnson, and with me today is singer, educator, and creator of The Naked Voice, Chloe Goodchild. And we were just talking about the voice and oneness and the voice needing that safety zone, that safety place, a place of trust to open up. And I'm gonna ask you this question. I'm fascinated, Chloe. You're not only an educator and a voice coach. You have a lot of albums out there. You are also a singer. And I believe a songwriter. On the morning of September 11, 2001, you were flying from the UK over New York in a United Airlines plane destined for San Francisco. You were in the air when the tragic news of the World Trade Towers came through. So how did this event, if we're talking about voice, so the one is as an educator, of course, opening voices, but the one is also for you as a vocalist, as a singer, as a writer, how events from our world shape us and change us. So how did this event change you and call you to use your voice to write an entire album?
Yes. I made an album called Fierce Wisdom, which came out of that experience, in fact. And if I died tomorrow, I would be so happy I made that album. It flowed out of me, I think you could say, as sometimes these things can happen, particularly when they follow, you know, something really life-threatening. And it was an extraordinary experience because suddenly there we are flying from San Francisco from UK to San Francisco. And I was going to San Francisco to pick up a harmonium that I'd left there because I was going to teach up in a beautiful retreat center called Hollyhock up in British Columbia. And suddenly the pilot comes on the air and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, grave news." And I look down, I can't see anything out of the window. I'm thinking, oh, my God, we're going to crash land or something. And then he starts literally garbled language. The World Trade Towers, you know. And so the World Trade Tower is just about the only words you could hear. And the whole airplane just had to stop him so he could start again. He was obviously really, really freaked out, as anyone would be. And so he started again, and then he told us the news. And by that point, and we literally had only just cleared New York City, but all the whole kind of borders all around America had been closed. So we just had to keep flying. We weren't able to land anywhere. And so eventually we were brought down in Edmonton, And then I spent, I don't know, 2 or 3 days just staring at these television screens and standing in endless queues, talking to people about their, about this story and what it had catalyzed in them, in their relationship with life and death, you know, what this meant to them. Mm-hmm. And people, of course, who knew of people who had been in the direct line of the fire and of the calamity. And it was just the most extraordinary, surreal. It's like being in a sort of parallel universe. But it was also like being in a Naked Voice workshop in a way, because everybody was so vulnerable and so open and willing to speak and just to share their hearts, you know, in a way that you wouldn't normally perhaps find in a you know, kind of a regular everyday airplane queue waiting to, you know, board another airplane. And what then happened was that I collected my harmonium from, eventually made my way to San Francisco, and then made my way up to this beautiful island, Native American land, where this holistic center is. And there I met 50 people who'd come together for this 5-day retreat to find your voice. And I didn't think I have ever heard naked voices as I heard in those 5 days. It really just brought home to me just how profound are these contexts that you create, that many of us are creating now, where people can come together in this way and really hear themselves for the first time. And I remember just saying something, the statement kept on coming to me, the great mother will carry on killing until we wake up. And I had this very strong image of Kali, you know, the goddess who in the Hindu pantheon who devours human beings, who she's the great goddess of fierce love, you could say. And so the title Fierce Wisdom was really born out of that experience. And my own teacher, who I never actually met directly, but I encountered her in dreams, one of the great luminaries of 20th century India, the woman saint called Anandamayi Ma. She was one of the counselors of Mahatma Gandhi and the whole Nehru dynasty and so on. She was a phenomenal presence of love, unconditional love, self-initiated teacher in India. And I was just constantly aware of the presence of the being of the sacred feminine sitting in the heart of the world, just saying, we have to waken the feminine. The feminine has to really be honored now in order to bring an end to these crises. And that was now 18 years ago. And my God, right. Is that happening? Yes. No, it's
yeah,
really
it is happening. Right. The divine feminine is very present. I think we have many chanting circles or many shamanic workshops and retreats where people are able to get in touch also with transformational voice work. And yes, as you said so clearly, our voice is the connecting force. I had to think about that also when you were talking about your work with the therapists and psychologists and doctors coming together also with people that are in therapy or going through therapy, and they don't know who's who. And I had to think,
yes,
that voice is not only in an individual path, but the power of voice, similar to the power of breath, and voice of course has both, is that our sound is in a group, it can be one, it can shift harm to harmony. It can penetrate each other's bodies. And somebody who's schizophrenic, for example, can have a fabulously wonderful voice. And somebody who may be a doctor and trained can have also a wonderful voice, but also feel the same hesitations, right? And so we are all one on the playing field. And that's, so why does voice hold the key? I mean, I think I was just talking about it now, but we have, the voice is possible, intergenerational, intercultural, interracial, interbeingness. The voice seems to be the missing link and the connecting force and something that we very much need to explore. We are now in 2019, right? You were talking about 18 years ago, the World Trade Center fell. If you have one golden nugget about the voice that you'd like to give us to help us to come into that place and to enrich our lives, what would it be? And I know you have many, 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 because you've been doing this for a long, long time. Yes. Is there one that could help?
We're so lucky, aren't we, to share this work and be called this work. And it's that theme of the call that is so critical, isn't it? And to be able to access a very deep sense of longing within oneself, you know, to be fully human, not to waste time, not to waste this opportunity, but to become fully human, to become fully, you know, bios, eros, thanatos, to be able to live the full life cycle of birth, life, and death in every breath, you know, to become present, to support each other, to do this. A while back, I was asked to go and offer what was called a surprise musical evening for a group of international policymakers from 35 different countries. This included people who were from the defense world, from foreign offices, I mean, really quite official human beings who were literally coming together to really try and have a discussion for a few days in quiet, in private, just to really let their hair down. And so I had the privilege of being present at this three-day event. And at the beginning, I was introduced to somebody who was going to give this musical surprise on the last day. So I had 3 days to listen to this kind of extraordinary militaristic and defensive language, launching the killing machine, you know. I mean, very, very powerful strategic conversations going on about how we defend ourselves. It was absolutely fascinating. And I went through, you know, I went through the thing of, right, clearly I'm here to save these people. You know, and, the kind of the ego coming in and going, right, we'll go out there and we'll really just say how it is. And, but by the end of the third day, I realized it was like just seeing this group of people like little boys, mainly men, little boys who'd been required by their parents, well-behaved, to become, you know, these kind of world representatives of the world shadow, if you like, and were all highly confused, highly uncertain, very afraid, and longing for some kind of other kind of outcome. And so I bet it's the same with you. You can't prepare for something like that. And it wasn't like, I think they were imagining they were going to have a concert. And I just thought, this is just not quite what's wanted here. I think what's wanted here probably is just, let's have a conversation about death and our fear of death. Let's just open with that. And I had no idea where this was going to go. But my father had just died And I just literally had taken all the technical language that had been used over the 3 days, and I thought, well, let's turn this into an improvisation. So I started out with that. So that was a kind of musical improvisation, but quite shocking for them. And I thought, there was another part of me inside myself going, what are you doing? You know, this is insane. But it, somehow it worked. It galvanized their attention because it was so shocking to suddenly hear this kind of defense language being turned into music, into just improvised song, that they were just kind of in a kind of state of shocked silence at the end. And then that enabled me just to ask them, you know, and just first of all to say thank you for having me here. I just really want to thank you because I thought I'd come here to, you know, present an alternative viewpoint. But what I hear is that we are all here to unravel the same issue, our terror, our fear of death, of our mortality. Is there anybody here who's been in the presence of someone who's died? Not one single person. Not one single person responded. And so I said, well, my father's just died, and I was with him. I was lucky to be able to be with him, to be able to pray with him and to sing with him while he was passing. And it was an extraordinary experience. And that taught me that sound can take us from this physical reality without fear into the next reality.
Right.
And so they were, that was okay. People were relaxing, you know, ties were coming down, jackets were coming off. And I said, well, and then I just started to share with them some sound practices. We got into a circle, and the highlight of these practices was one in which I invited them to imagine that their voice was a gift to another country. We'd done some work with the voice, just like sounding out one breath, one voice, and so on, to really start to hear when the breath comes to an end, it's like a death, and then another breath comes. So we started just exploring the nature of death that way, and the deathlessness of death, and life itself, and how the breath brings new life, etc. And this led us into this conversation around, okay, imagine that you're just going to bring your right hand up and over and out like an offering, like you're releasing a bird, you're releasing your voice, and you're going to give it to another country. And I looked around the circle, and I saw Italy, and I said, Italy, Europe's most musical culture, will you lead us? And he was just like absolutely shut down, very, very self-conscious. No, no, there's no way I can do that. And he was shaking his head. But the rest of all the other countries were going, come on, Italy, you can do it, you know. So he, and literally because he was Italian, his programming was such that he just could not help himself but stand up. And he stood up, and out of his mouth came the most incredible voice you've ever heard. He was singing to, you know, La Scala. He was singing Italian opera. And he was singing across the circle, and he landed in Canada. And Canada was kind of looking really terrified at what was coming towards it. But Canada took the baton and just released his voice and went over to Norway, who rock and rolled over to Beijing, you know, went over to, and it went on and on and on and on and on, all the way around.
Chloe, how you're using singing practice to usher in a new world of peace and prosperity for all. My goodness gracious, the time flew by. I'm very thankful to have you on the show today, and I hope that
my
we can
pleasure.
Do it again
Thank
very
you.
Soon.
Thank you. God bless.
Yeah, God bless. Chloe Goodchild.
Great pleasure.